All right, we'll call this the second session. We do a double session on this for everybody, as you probably well know. So just be sure, like we do at Maranatha, that as you approach this, you are where you need to be in your soul. All right, moving on here. After the event at Tabara, we have them complaining about manna and lusting for different food. Numbers 11, 4 and following. This comes right on the heel of that little fire event that freaked them out. Now, in verse 4, it reads as follows. The rabble who were among them had greedy desires. Now, this would indicate an element within the among them. And this rabble, as it's called here, this is a question, it's not an answer. Is this the mixed multitude? Mixed multitude were individuals who aligned themselves with Israel and came out like Egyptians and others, Ethiopians and all the rest that might have decided that the system they're in isn't cutting it. We're going to get with this dynamic. Anyway, there's this instigated the action on the part of the people at large. And also the sons of Israel. And also, see, that's in addition to the, quote, rabble. I don't have the Hebrew word in front of me right now. I should run that down and see if it pops up anywhere else to give more clues on this. But be that as it may, it's an element that had greedy desires. And also the sons of Israel wept again and said, who will give us meat to eat? And here we go again. Same old boring mantra. We remember the fish which we used to eat free in Egypt. Oh, don't you love their words? They just had free food. Amazing. What can you say? The cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic. But now our appetite is gone. There's nothing at all to eat, look at, except this manna. And then we have another description of the manna, and they have a description of how they would prepare it. The recipe. Well, the options here. Okay, on this occasion, Moses heard the people. Now they are, this must have been quite an effect on the ear, sense of hearing. All these people are crying. Like little children or somebody that's had something taken away from them. Adults. They're crying throughout their families, the doorway of their tent. And the anger of the Lord, that's verse 10, was greatly kindled, and Moses was displeased. Moses can get out of fellowship too, by the way. Guess what? He can get out of the fellowship. The spiritual leader can allow the pressures of, in my case, the ministry, at any given particular time, to get under your skin and get you out of fellowship. We have an example here with Moses. Moses is whining. We probably would look at Moses and say, well, I can see why he'd have to say something like this. He says to the Lord, why have you been so hard on your servant? And why have I not found favor in your sight? He's sounding kind of like them. You haven't found any favor so far? You can't cite anything in the recent past that would indicate divine favor? Huh. That you have laid the burden of this people on me. Was it I who conceived this people? He is venting. Out of fellowship, venting for Moses. Here's an excellent passage. Was it I who conceived all these people? Was it I who brought them forth? That you should say, carry them in your bosom as a nurse carries a nursing infant to the land which you swore to your fathers? Where am I to go to get meat to give all these people? For they weep before me, saying, give us meat that we may eat. I alone am not able to carry this people because it is too burdensome. I've had it. This is Moses freaking out. Which actually, when you're in a position of leadership, you recognize that you might have one of these moments. But he's still the leader. God isn't. He went off on this one. So if you're going to deal this with it, just kill me now. Verse 15. Just take me out. If I found favor in your sight, and do not let me see my wretchedness. He recognizes that he's just wanting to throw in the towel and give up. Moses, on this occasion, this one got under his skin. So again, for observation purposes, for people who are related to a pastor teacher who's doing his job, he may have a moment like this. I've had it. I'm done with it. Why don't you get somebody else? If I'm not good enough, kill me. God isn't going to be provoked by that stupid talk. It's just a moment in the life. So God's going to help Moses out. All right, you need help. I'll get you these 70 elders. And that's, which I'm not going over. And I'll give you 70 men and we'll distribute some of the chores of all this. Which would have been a good idea anyway. 70 doesn't seem like very many people when you have all these people. But 70, God knows what he's doing. That's where the Jewish number 70 comes down through time. Sanhedrin was 70. The Septuagint, supposedly 70 Jewish scholars translating the Hebrew Old Testament into the Greek Old Testament. 70. They like the number 70. Now, skipping to verse 8, consecrate yourselves for tomorrow, and you shall eat meat. For you have wept in the ears of the Lord, saying, oh, someone would give us meat to eat, for we were well off in Egypt. Therefore, the Lord will give you meat to eat. You want meat? We'll get you meat. We will deliver it to your tent door. We'll give you all the meat you want. We'll give you meat until you're so damn sick of it. It isn't funny. See, here's the thing. If the Israelites had simply been of the right spirit, the right kind of believers, they would have simply had this thing about going on about, we'd like to have a repeat of our first meal in the wilderness, the quail event. Let's just go ask Moses, if you'll ask God, and we might get that. Then it wouldn't be greedy desires, lusting. It's how you approach things that you might want, that you might have the desire of your heart. This is something that maybe has escaped people. One person lusting after something, wanting it so badly, and another person desiring the same thing that's legitimate, and simply asking God and waiting on him to deliver it. In both of these cases, both people get it, but the others are cursed with it. It's a curse. All right. You shall eat meat. You want meat? So this is where something that would have been a blessing turns out to be a cursing. You're sick of manna. Perfectly designed food delivery system for Israel during this time. Nobody else ever got it that way, to that level. I'm thinking maybe that's how God's going to water and feed the Jews who flee the Antichrist system in Israel and go into those places of hiding. What are they going to have for food down there? They're going to get a repeat of what their fathers and their ancestors got in the desert. Because there's no way they could pack enough food to last 3.5 years. All right. Let me read this here. Therefore the Lord will give you meat and you shall eat. You shall eat not one day, not 2 days, not 5 days, not 10, not 20, but a whole month, 30 days. I am going to bury you in meat. Until it comes out your nostrils and becomes loathsome to you because you rejected the Lord who is among you and have wept before him saying, why did we ever leave Egypt? He gets tired of this. So this comes down on him. Moses is still a little twitchy. The people among whom I am are, this is a rounded off figure, 600,000 on foot. That's just the adult males. Yet you said, I will give them meat so they may eat. Should flocks and herds be slaughtered for them to be sufficient for them? Or should all the fish of the sea be gathered together, here we go again, to be sufficient for them? Now we come back to square one. Basic Bible doctrine 101, gang. We're dealing with God. We're dealing with God in this test. Or whatever personal test you have. So don't be acting like even Moses. Where is this going to come from? You want us to slaughter all our livestock? And he waxes extreme. All the fish in the sea, well, all the fish in the sea. What? So he's not acting well. So this event resulted in the lust for different food turns into a curse, and a bunch of them die. They don't even start eating the food appropriately. It's like some, I don't know what to describe it. It's like someone, it'd be like someone just grabbing some food and just stuffing it in their mouth, not eating appropriately. A bunch of them died while it was in their mouths. And along the way, God's killing them off. The Exodus generation. The living ones never figure out, I don't want to go down that path. I think I'll pull my little horns in. It's not the nature of some people. All right. Complained about manna, lusting for different food, all the details. And then, of course, we have in Numbers 14, the coup de grace. This is the one that slammed the door on God giving them a second chance or another chance. You can go so far in testing God before you face the possibility of the sin and the death. And all those who died in the wilderness died the sin unto death. They didn't complete what we would say our course and die with honor and go into the afterlife under those conditions. Something bad happened to them along the way. In Numbers 14, this chapter has as its background that uh, the evil report of the 12 spies. Pretty familiar to people. And the report wasn't all bad. The report had truth in it. The truth was, see, all they'd ever heard about was how great this land was. Nobody, including Moses, none of them, had ever seen a square inch of it. So 12 spies went in from the 12 tribes and reconnaissance the land and looked at things. And it does, you know, to use the expression, it does flow with milk and honey. And they brought back samples of the fruit that they picked, carrying it between each. Two men would be carrying it on a pole between them. That's the symbol for the patch for the guides for Israel. So they give this report. Nevertheless, the people who live in the land are strong and the cities are fortified and very large. That's true. Between the time of the exodus into Egypt and the time of Jacob, and all those years that in between, the Canaanites became more populous and they got into the mode of building these big walled cities like Jericho. They're strong, the cities are fortified and very large, and moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. They probably only heard about these giants. Amalek is living in the land of the Negev, and the Hittites, and the Jebusites, and the Amorites are living in the hill country, and the Canaanites are living by the sea and by the side of the Jordan. Okay, so far, that's okay. That's just a report of the disposition of people. That part of it, no problem. So, but the whole undercurrent of the majority report is that this isn't possible for us to ever consider conquering this land. And you forgot the Red Sea crossing already? And that battle you had with the Amalekites and you prevailed? The first military engagement of the nation of Israel and you won? Stories in there too. Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "We should by all means go up and take possession of it, for we shall surely overcome it." Faith, based on the past. But the men who had gone up with him said, "We're not able to go up against this people, they're too strong for us." So they gave out to the sons of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone in spying it out is a land that devours its inhabitants." What? The Canaanites are flourishing in this land. They're prosperous. They got cities. They got farmlands. This is the nastiness of these people, that you can twist something till it's unrecognizable. That's the exhortation. Do not be remotely like the Exodus generation. They go on with the part about, "And all the people whom we saw in it are men of great size." All the people aren't men of great size. What in the blank is this? There is a contingent of giants in the land. They aren't very populous, numerous. But yes, they're imposing people like the Goliath thing. "We also saw the Nephilim, the sons of Anak out there, and we became like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so were we in their sight." Always exaggerating stuff. These big guys can be brought down too. They've got their vulnerabilities. So in the next chapter, then all the congregation, here we go again, lifted up their voices. Do you know how some people and cried and the people wept that night? You know how some people try to get their way? By breaking down in tears and crying. Don't be intimidated by it. It's a tool that some people use. All the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, "Would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would that we had died in this wilderness." Well, you're going to get that. You're going to get the second of the two. You keep saying it, and it comes true. "Why is the Lord bringing us in this land to fall by the sword? Our wives, our little ones will become plunder. Would it be better for us," again, "to return to Egypt?" So they said to one another, "Let us appoint a leader and return to Egypt." More just constant stupidity and idiocy. Yeah, Egypt's a wonderful place. You want to go back there now? So Aaron and Moses fell on their faces. They were wanting to stone Moses. And the glory of the Lord appeared at the meeting. And this is where the Lord slams the door on the Exodus generation and takes an oath and says, "Not one person of that generation will all die in the wilderness according to their own words. And they will not see the land." He says, if one of them, one of that generation of that mentality survives, then I'm not God. I'm taking out every one of them. What are the odds of that happening? So moving on, only two men out of that generation got to enter the land. You heard the name of one of them was Caleb. The other was Joshua. See, here again, God takes count of those who are faithful to Him. Two out of 600,000. Got the percentage point for me for that one? God honors you if you're positive. Get your eyes off of other people who act up if you are in any kind of situation like that. And know that God will honor those who are faithful and not assign them the fate of those who are unfaithful. And so it was Joshua and Caleb. And Caleb was the one that actually, in his military activity in the land under Joshua, he's the one with his men who went in and took out those giants. Did them in. They had God on their side. Instead, their children enjoyed the phase two blessings of entering the promised land. Deuteronomy 1:39. "More of your little ones whom you said would become a prey, and your sons who this day have no knowledge of good and evil shall enter there." That means they're little babies, I guess. "To them I will give it to possess." Psalm 106:24. The real mentality is, then they despised the pleasant land, did not believe in His word. The divine assessment of that generation: "For 40 years I loathed that generation and said, they are people who err in their heart and do not know my ways." Deuteronomy 1:35. "Not one of these men, this evil generation, shall see the good land which I swore to their fathers." Psalm 78:8. Now, there's a bunch of this. That Psalm 78's got a bunch of, about them. "And do not be like their fathers, a stubborn, rebellious generation, a generation that did not prepare its heart and whose spirit was not faithful to God." And in conclusion, God will not test the believer beyond what a believer can handle. And all these things happened to them, Exodus generation, as an example. And they were written for our instruction, upon whom the ends of the ages have come, church age. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed that he does not fall. No testing has overtaken you, but such as is common to man, and God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tested beyond what you are able, but with the testing will provide the way of escape so that you will be able to endure it. It might just be that this is going to be a long, drawn-out test with different phases to it, this virus thing. And our deliverance will be the rapture. That would be perfect. So we have to suffer some more. God will provide during the suffering. Thank you, Heavenly Father, for the opportunity of dispensing this information. Continue to bless our efforts and those who have an ear to hear. In Christ's name, amen.